And he'll go laterally to the far side and just rag the time off the clock. The Boston Bruins are going to collect a 3-0 victory here in Buffalo. Yaroslav Halak pitches the shutout. He stops all 26 Sabre shots. And for the Bruins, the first time they have recorded back-to-back victories in 24 days.
Welcome into another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you from the Town Fair Tire Studios here in Dorchester. We'll take your calls throughout the next couple hours, 617-779-0985. We'll check in with the rest of the gang along the way as well. Bruins with a 3-0 shutout of the Buffalo Sabres last night on the road. They'll come home for a matchup against the Sabres tomorrow night at the Garden. We'll talk a lot about that game last night, as well as the win over Washington earlier this week throughout. Guys, good to have you here. Good morning.
Morning. Morning.
You had a good week.
Yeah. You know what? We've been, last couple of weeks we've been here, it's like, we got to get this thing turned around, right? But a really nice win over Washington, especially the start of that game on Monday. Get a Christmas break off, and then last night, even shorthanded on defense, managed to pitch a shutout against a pretty good offensive team in Buffalo.
No, I like the way they played last night. I mean, there was some chances early that Halak was real strong on, but maybe a couple breakdowns early. I thought they got better as the game went on, and they were good. They deserved that. A couple high-end offensive plays by the top line. That was pretty impressive. That was pretty impressive what we saw in that passing plays.
It's funny because I started to think back at times over the last couple of years, if that Bergeron line has had just an extra day off, what they can do with that rest, and they were electrifying last night. I thought it was fascinating listening to Ralph Kruger's comments after the game. He mentioned that the first goal that Bergeron scored last night sent a shockwave through the Sabres, and they were not able to recover. And that was the goal late in the first period on the man advantage. And that was a face-off
play. That's
alarming
then.
Yeah.
Right.
Down 1-0.
1-0 towards the end of one.
And here's a guy who is, he and the language are very friendly. So he has an excellent command of the language. And when he used that terminology to describe that and the impact that it had on his team, I think it explains how fragile the Sabres are.
Well, I mean, that's a whole conversation that they need to be having in Buffalo today. If one great play, and it was a great play, but if that's got you hanging your heads down 1-0 to this team after one, that's not a good place for them to be. From the Bruins' perspective, though, as I said, obviously coming out of that Washington game, they get banged up. Torrey Krug gets placed on IR. McAvoy's out last night, and so you call on Halak to have a good game, and he did. He made some key saves in that game. Buffalo had some chances right outside his crease, and he was all over them. But, you know what, defensively, this team, even without its best players, and they bring Stephen Kampfer back up from Providence and, plug these guys into different places, and they managed to pitch a shutout. Again, we've talked a lot over the years about the depth of this team defensively, and it shows itself last night.
Brandon Carlo was real strong on the defensive side of things, too. I mean, he was out there a lot against Eichel. I mean, him and Chara, obviously, but and Chara back in the lineup as well. He missed that game against the Capitals. So, that they had chances, right? I mean, Buffalo had some early looks where things could have been a little bit different if Halak doesn't make a save or if a puck bounces a different way, but it didn't. And Bruins had chances, too. They had three chances that stood out to me in the right-wing circle and that were good saves against them. But Buffalo had probably the better of the opportunities maybe in the first period. As the period went on, Boston got harder and stronger and kind of took over. There was a chance late, I think, in the first period coming down the slot, and it was a pass from Skinner. I think it was Johansson had all kinds of chances last night.
Connor Sherry had a great chance.
So, but I mean, they clamped down pretty well, and Carlo, I think, led the way on D last night in the way that he played.
They just denied the middle of the ice after the second period. Even a guy like Jack Eichel, I think he had 8 shot attempts, only 2 were able to find its way through to Yaroslav Halak.
He was frustrated.
And there were times in the third period.
He looked at anyhow.
Where you saw the Sabres trying to pick up the pace to see if they could carve into that lead. At that point, it was 2-0, but they couldn't penetrate the middle.
Talking about Carlo, we spoke about him last week or two. I don't know. last week or two, he's come up here as, you know, we talked, I think, about he and McAvoy, that combination of the young guys and their continued development. And, you know, Carlo's defensive game, has no doubt taken some significant strides here over the last couple of years. And, you know, it's good to see that when he gets thrust into a bigger role and being the, you know, a top two defenseman when they need him to be, that he can be that. And not only that, but, you know, he even got a little bonus with an empty netter last night as well. But
it's a different dynamic.
Yeah.
It's when he's with Chara as opposed to when McAvoy's with Chara, it's a different dynamic. So pros and cons, you know, with those pairings, right? The sense with Carlo is, okay, he can be a shutdown guy. And for me, and I think for a lot of people, he's going to have a long career in the NHL as a shutdown D, not as somebody that's going to put up a lot of points. Mm-hmm. I'm glad he's got his fourth goal of the season. It's just, I don't see him as an offensive guy. It's just the plays at the offensive blue line and having that come to his game. Maybe it develops a little bit. He's not an offensive defenseman. He's going to be in the league a long time as a defensive defenseman, as a shutdown guy. And he's a big guy that can skate. He's learned to incorporate some of that more physical play into his game as well. You know, stronger in the corner, stronger in front of the net. You know, he was riding somebody last night in the third period there. I think it was Ristolainen who was banging away. So I mean, that to me is where he's going to be really good. Now, McAvoy, I think, has more offensive upside, even though it hasn't shown on the score sheet this year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to come as well. That'll continue to develop. But he plays hard, you know, all zones, and then have the offense continue to develop. He's going to be able to add more of that offense into his game. So different components when you put either of those guys with Chara. Now, do you spend too much time in your own zone when you have Carlo and Chara? You know, that might be some of it. They're a shutdown pair, but they're always shutting down. You know, so
yep.
We need some at the offensive end. I think that's why they split those guys up and try to spread it out a little bit.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you is, you know, we've seen some experimentation with, you know, with McAvoy and Krug together. And, you know, we know, and we've seen it in the past when Carlo, early on in Carlo's career, he and Chara were kind of joined at the hip.
And a mentorship too is,
yeah,
they've talked about that, you know,
but,
get a guy's feet wet by playing with Chara and, you know, learning the shutdown part of it.
But I'd be interested to get your thoughts. Like, you know, ultimately, would you rather see that one shutdown pair in Chara Carlo and then the more offensive minded pair, or do you like the balance of like one maybe offensive minded guy and one defensive minded guy together?
Well, I don't quantify McAvoy as an offensive guy. I think he's, you know, both ends of the ice, and I think Torrey Krug proved some of that last year as well. You know, especially not just last year, he's proved it over his career. He competes in all three zones. It's not just, you know, at the offensive end. He competed hard in the defensive side of the puck last year in the playoffs. So, I mean, he had some battles. I mean, back to the battles he had against Carolina, against Columbus. I mean, he was going at it with guys. So. And even St. Louis. So, you know, I know that he's going to make his money as an offensive defenseman, but I don't know how much you sacrifice if you put McAvoy and Krug together. I've enjoyed watching that pair play, you know, and it kind of frees McAvoy up to kind of get going a little bit more as well offensively. You know, when he plays with Chara, there's a defensive side of it. You're playing against another team's top line. And you got to be conscious of that. You got to be aware of it. That okay, maybe I can't go in this situation. Chara, for all of his assets, for all of his strong, what he does well, you know, getting the puck to him and then getting moving and having pace. It's not one of them right now.
Sure.
So I mean, it's just a fact. And with Krug, it does free McAvoy up to go a little bit more.
I think it's so matchup and game dependent, but it's such a weapon for the Bruins that you can mix and match the pairs as you see fit. Hey, if you're going up against, say, a big unit in a team like the New York Islanders, you can put assuming everybody's healthy, you can put Carlo and Char together and go at it with guys like Anders Lee and Brock Nelson and some of the bigger forwards.
Which McAvoy's capable of doing as well.
Absolutely.
But if you'd use him there, then maybe you're not maximizing some of the other assets that he has, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's some of the thinking behind it, yeah.
I love it that you can kind of mix and match, and it can all be based on the opponent that you're playing or what the situation of the game dictates.
One other thing about Carlo, because you mentioned, Bob, he's gotten stronger. He's able to go into the corners and win those battles.
But it's not that he's gotten stronger. It's that he's playing with more conviction.
Okay.
That's what we were talking about a couple of years ago when he was going through a sort of a bumpy patch on this path. Again, he is still so young as a National Hockey Leaguer. But the whole idea was to play with conviction. He's never going to go out and blow guys up. But he can use his physical stature, his skating, and his stick to influence the play.
That's the one thing I think I still would like to see him develop just a little bit more of a mean streak.
Right? He's not just Kevin Miller.
No, I know he's not going to, and I don't expect that he's ever going to be that type of player.
He has played harder over the last couple of seasons. And when I say harder, he's been a harder guy to play against over the last couple of seasons by being a little meaner out there.
And yeah, I mean, he's a physically imposing guy. He's a big guy out there. Like, I would just, and I think you're right. I think he does use it more, now than he ever has. It's just there are times when I feel like, he could be a little bit more intimidating, with the size that he's got. Yeah, my opinion. That's all. 617-779-0985. We'll get to your calls on the Bruins coming off that win last night. Coming up next, it's the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers. Taking you up until 11 o'clock. 617-779-0985. And talk about the Bruins' wins over Buffalo last night, Washington on Monday night, and the overall state of the team as we get ready to head into 2020. Got Dan in Newburyport's up first this morning. Morning, Dan.
Yeah, hey, so I want to talk about Danton Heinen. And so he's making $2.5 million per year through next year. Then he's an RFA. He's going to want at least $3 million after that. And he's the type of player that I'm just not giving that to him. He's a bottom six forward. I get he's defensively sound, but he doesn't have that offensive upside that you invest that kind of money into. I watch him in offensive situations, and he just doesn't seem to have it. He's hitting posts on wide open nets. He's passing into skates and sticks on two-on-ones and three-on-twos when Charlie Coyle is sitting there for a one-timer. So now I get to my point. If you're not going to re-sign him, which would be something that Chiarelli would have loved to do, he's exactly that type of player that got them into trouble in the past, now is a good time to trade him when he has term and the team that would get him would have control over him because he's going to be an RFA. You already have too many left-shot wingers. He isn't much of an upgrade, honestly. You can put Par Lindholm over there on that third line who's making $1 million, and I really don't think he is much of a downgrade from someone like Dan Heinen. You're up against the cap. You're going to need to clear that money to make room for the second-line winger or third-line center that you desperately need here. So what sort of trade value around the league does Dan Heinen have? I think it's something like Heinen, maybe a depth defenseman. You can clear $4 million or so that you need to make room for that addition and then package in a pick in Zboril or something.
Right. All right, thanks for the call, Dan. I appreciate it. Let's talk about Danton Heinen as a player because he's been getting, recently some time on the first power play unit. He's been, a top six winger here recently. He was playing on the right side of the Krejci line.
He only has 3 points less than Jake DeBrusk.
Out of necessity, by the way.
Yes. That's not obvious. I don't think that's what they're looking at as their long-term solution at right wing, but That's the role that he's in right now. Can we talk about, because this is a guy who I think gets picked on a little bit around here because he's not going to be a guy who jumps off the score page at you. But he does bring some important intangibles to the table for this team if he's in the right role, which I'm not sure he's in right now. Like, I feel like, you know, a top six winger position
last
for
year
him
in the playoffs,
is,
he was third line left wing.
Yeah. And that's ultimately, I think, his best spot.
I've thought he's got more offense in him, but we haven't really seen it. I mean, he actually had more points than DeBrusk his first year. When they were rookies together, when they were first-year players together, he had more points than DeBrusk. And then DeBrusk broke through last year with 27 goals. Now, Jake has been a little off this year in terms of production. So, I realize the point totals, Judd, but that's, I think, more because Jake has been off this year, Jake DeBrusk has. So, trade-wise, if you're looking to move somebody, he's got value. He's a reliable player. He's a nice player. He's a guy that he's not going to hurt you. You can put him on right wing. You can put him on left wing. You can play him a little up in the lineup. You can play him a little down in the lineup. I think there's more offense in him, but it hasn't shown. It hasn't shown up on the score sheet. And I think he makes good plays. I think he makes smart plays, you know, that probably don't go noticed by some. There's sometimes he frustrates you a little bit, but sure. I mean, he's thrown into one of a large number of players that if you're looking to make a move and add, that would have value. Sure, absolutely.
He has value because he's young and because he's not getting paid a whole lot of money, and you can plug him in, as Bob alluded to, in all sorts of different spots. And I think one of his best attributes, in addition to the fact that he can win your coaching staff's trust to play in all types of situations, is that he's got great hockey sense. I think that everybody who probably sees him.
There's more offense in him. It hasn't shown up the last couple seasons.
Got a good shot. Loves going short side high on the blocker side. It just hasn't materialized, at least to this point.
Yeah, I mean, and look, as you said, back, you know, his first year, I mean, 16 goals and 47 points, you know, hasn't sniffed those numbers.
So is he a 40-point guy? Is that his ceiling? Is that what we're going to – I mean, he had 47, you said, but
right.
is 40 going to be the norm? Is there 50 in him? Is there 55 in him? I keep waiting to see the little breakout, and it really hasn't materialized the way that I kind of expected him to be more offensive. It just hasn't happened as much. But as far as being reliable, I mean, when he's out on the ice, I think, you know, he's coach with Cassidy's comfortable in situations when he's out on the ice. You know, he's probably not going to be out there in the last minute, but not because he's not reliable, because there's probably other people that they're going to count on a little bit more in that situation. I mean, you know, last minute of games, you know, who are you going to see out there? You normally see Bergeron, you see Marchand, and then you see X on the other side, whether it's Krejci or whether it's Coyle. Last night it was Coyle, right? You know, you're not going to see Pastrnak if you're protecting the lead late in the game there. So, you know, you're going to have guys that are options – better options in front of him, but it wouldn't be a bad option either. He might be out there for, you know, at the 2-minute mark,
right,
prior to the last minute. So I don't know. To the caller's point, hey, you know, do you package him with somebody if you're trying to bring in a right winger or somebody to upgrade on that side? He's one of several names that would come up in that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it's again just because of, you know, the versatility. Like, he's going to fit in on any team. Right, I mean, that's kind of what, you know, from a Bruins perspective, says, okay, well, other teams are going to have interest in him because if they need a left wing, if they need a right wing, if they need, you know, somebody in the middle of their lineup, like, he's going to fit regardless of where you want to put him.
Well, let's go one step further, because most teams that are challenging for a Stanley Cup, if they're going to make a transaction, they typically don't trade off the roster.
Right.
They'll trade their prospects, they'll trade their picks, but they typically
and make
don't
that
want
move
to
in the offseason. Make the other move in the offseason.
Absolutely. So I think... if you're going to see a guy like that moved, it would happen after the season, not in season.
617-779-0985. We go to Michael in North Andover up next. Hey, Michael.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. I love the show and listen every week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can you please, please give me a Kevin Miller update?
I wish we could.
I'm begging you. I want to see him in the lineup so bad. He's just... And the quicker he gets back in the lineup, if he gets back, he'll be ready for playoffs, and he's got size. I love the guy. And Carlo, what more can you say about the guy? He's just getting confidence with every game that he plays, and the first playoffs he had last year was a blessing after missing two I mean, he's coming around. I think he's going to be our best defenseman within time. And one more thing, and I'll hang up. Is Klug, do you think Klug will be traded? And I appreciate your time, but please let me know about Kevin All Miller. Right. I'm just missing him. Thank
All
you.
All right, thanks, Michael. What do we know?
Nothing. I think the last thing that Bruce Cassidy had said that he had an additional procedure, whatever that procedure was, we have no idea.
Legal.
Yes, it was a legal procedure. But as far as I know, at this point, he is not skating, and he has. And the only
Which
way
is
to
multiple
really
multiple setbacks because you know he started skating, then he's not, and he started in last year. So, yeah, I want the guy back in the lineup too. I'm having at this point in time, we're almost halfway through the season. We haven't seen him, and we haven't heard anything. You know, I'm moving forward without him, and hopefully. You know, that's
the expectation you have to have at this point.
You have to move forward. You have to have plans to move forward without him unless they know something, which I'm sure they do. They know more than we do, but about his progress. I mean, there's nothing. He's out of sight, out of mind right now as far as, you know, I'll use a Bruce Cassidy, and no disrespect intended, but you have to move forward thinking, okay, we're not going to have Kevin Miller. Now, maybe that's completely off, and I hope that I'm wrong. But that's the way I see it right now.
And when it comes to timetables,
multiple setbacks for a guy 30-something years old on a serious injury like he had, and he's unrestricted at the end of the year as well. So I mean, it's just I don't know. I wish we had an update.
Yeah,
I think typically you cannot form a timetable until any player, whether it's Kevin Miller, when that player comes back and starts to practice with the full group. Now, Charlie McAvoy is going to skate today. Mm-hmm. The Bruins are going to practice at 11:30 over at Warrior, so maybe the Bruins will have a better idea of his status heading either into Sunday's game or beyond that. And the same goes. Torrey Krug is on injured reserve. At minimum, I think the quickest he could return would be against the Devils, but whether it's Krug, Miller, McAvoy, until that player is cleared by the doctors, heads back to practice, that's when the timetables start.
Yeah, I mean, once they, you know, as you said, even with Miller, he started skating and then he just kind of disappeared. And, you know, nobody really knew what was going on until we got there was another procedure. And that's all that we know. It could have been something that could be a couple weeks. It could be something that could be months. We have no idea. And that's, you know, until we do.
Well, just to give you an example, to go back to the playoffs with Kevin Miller, I think the Bruins, you know, felt like, hey, you know, he was going to be back at some point, potentially in the conference finals. Then he had a setback, and the Bruins were unable never to see him play in a playoff game last year.
617-779-0985. We can continue to take your phone calls coming up, and then Ty Anderson is also going to join us as we continue here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. The Sports Hub Hockey Show, Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers, now being joined in the Town Fair Tire Studios by Ty Anderson of 98.5thesportshub.com. Morning.
What's going on? Merry holidays of all sorts. Good to be back.
Merry holidays. I'm going to put
that
on
a hat for
put
Christmas?
That on a card.
I did. I got the new Patriots Army Green hat. Love it.
I'm not into all the camo stuff. Like the NFL sells you that for the whole month. It's just feel like it's too much.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Did you get that when you had to blow off the Bruins game for the Patriots game last Sunday?
I'm sorry. I apologize 1,000 times. It felt so odd.
Saturday night Patriots game.
It was nice listening to the radio broadcast on the way home, though. I'll tell you that much.
Cheating on the Bruins.
Tomorrow we get the double dip. It's a 1 and a 7, so I can do both. So I'm very excited about that.
Wow, double duty. You're making all kinds of cash tomorrow.
No, the check's still the same. I just want to do it.
Nice win last night for the Bruins. Down Krug, down McAvoy, as we were talking about earlier. They pitch a shutout. Yaro Halak was really good last night.
Yeah, I thought especially in that first period and then again late. I thought that he made some great saves. That one on Johansson on the first period is a great save. And then late, that sequence there where Buffalo gets sort of a shortened power play, they got some looks there, and it was a little chaotic, but at the end of the day, he keeps out of the net, right? And that prevents that from becoming a closer game than it needed to be. And I think that that's when, you know, they were leaning on Chara and Carlo heavily in that. And if they score a goal there, how does that change their fortune? How does that change the usage and what have you? So some big saves from him late and early. So I thought it was a great game from him. Great game from, I think, a lot of guys that needed it. That Bergeron line felt like October Bergeron line more than anything else, last night.
No question. I mean, I know Bergeron's got goals in three straight, two goals in each of the last three games, so six goals in three games. But that, you know, the plays, those are high-end plays. Those are plays that, you know, normal players can't make. And that's what they were doing, some of that back in, you're right, in October when they were just dominating. So that was great to see. Marchand was on right from the start. I from where I was watching him before the puck even dropped, and he looked like he was chirping Ristolainen even before the puck even dropped. I don't know. Maybe they're friends, and maybe I don't think so, but maybe they're friends, and maybe just having a normal conversation. It looked like he was chirping him right before the puck was being dropped, and I said, oh, he's going to be on tonight. You know, I don't know. That made it looked like it anyhow, and he walks out of the game with three helpers and a 3-0 win.
To follow up on your Yaroslav Halak point, remember heading into the Washington game, Bruce Cassidy had said, one of the things is our goaltenders need to push through. Rask did against Washington. You can make an argument that Halak did the other night against the Buffalo Sabres. I thought Charlie Coyle also followed up his performance against Washington with another strong performance against the Sabres.
And that's the thing with Coyle, right? It's not always going to be about the points. It's how does he look? How does he change the game? How does he open up the ice for the Bergeron line? They don't need that to happen. Like, they're immensely talented players on their own. But if that's working, now you're a more dangerous team. Now you're not what everyone complains about with this team, that they're a one-line team. No, when you have that guy going, it allows them to be the dominant force that they can be.
There was a shift there, and maybe Bob remembers it, where Coyle, you know, he darted behind the net, shook off a checker, just threw him aside, and then came and circled out in front and fired that shot right at Linus Ullmark. And yes, he did not score, but those are the type of plays that I think the coaching staff wants to see more of from him on a consistent basis.
Just, you know, you mentioned they're not a one-line team, but it really helps when that one line is going, and they're getting it going again over the last few games. You know, they, during that stretch where the team wasn't like 1 of 9 or whatever it was, you know, Marchand for a good chunk of that didn't score any goals. You know, Pasternak's goal scoring went down. They weren't, you know, wasn't that they were bad, but the production just wasn't there. And now, you know, all three of them are going at the same time.
Yeah, and I go back to that power play goal. The way that Pasternak sells that the fake shot.
Yeah,
I mean that's just, I watched that replay about a dozen times. I was like, that is just sick. Like, the way he's able to do that and then get it right on Bergeron. I mean, it's an empty net goal for Bergeron, essentially. Like, just the way everyone bites on that, and you have to with a guy of Pasternak's skill. And then, you know, they strip VC of the puck there, and they made it count. Right, they hit the net. They get a goal out of it. You know, that sort of, you know, a sign that they're feeling it and that their confidence is where it needs to be for this team, I thought. So, yeah, that was a great game from that line. And now it's about, where's everyone else fit? You know, where, like, Coyle, again, you talked about him, Judd. Like, I think that he's, we all know, we've all talked about it, he's best on line three, in the middle of line three. Now it's figuring out everything else around these two things, because these are, I think, the backbone, and obviously Krejci and DeBrus, but this is the backbone of what can make this team successful in April and May.
Yeah, the only thing that changes that is if you feel that somebody's ready to make the step, the progression from Providence, okay, and if it's a centerman, then Coyle's, you know, able to move to the right wing with Krejci. You bring up a centerman, and in theory, if the Corrali line is really going, like the Corrali line can play, and I'm talking about Corrali, Wagner, and Nordstrom, they're going to play against the other team's top lines, and they're probably going to get more minutes than a less experienced third line. Does that make sense? So if you bring up that guy from Providence, whether it's a Frederick or whether it's a Stadnika or whoever, okay, that player can plug in and play there, and they may not get as many minutes as the so-called fourth line does, because you're going to see more important minutes go to that Corrali line. They haven't been at the top of their game this year when they've been together. And I think that that's changed a little bit of how they've, you know, that and your personnel, injury-wise, that's changed their approach a bit this season. So, you know, if you're looking for a more skilled guy, then it's probably Studnik. If you're looking for a bulkier guy and someone that's had a couple opportunities so far but maybe wasn't quite ready yet, and that's Trent Frederick. Judd, What does he lead in the American Hockey League?
He's got 81 penalty minutes.
That leads the American Hockey League in penalty minutes. So, I mean, just, you know, you want a bigger, stronger, sturdier guy than, you know, somebody like him. So it might change the dynamic is what I'm saying, if he wanted to move Coyle. I agree. Coyle on the third line. And if he's your third line center, you're a deep team if the wingers are where they should be.
Let's talk a little bit about the game against Washington earlier this week. We haven't really touched on that at all in this first hour. You know, we're used to seeing 4-0 leads going in the other direction, as opposed to the Bruins, you know, blowing the doors off of the Capitals in that first period. Great to see that turnaround, number one, but also, you know, later on in that game, the Capitals played the Capitals game, and it got rough, and the Bruins got a little banged up because of it. What did you think of the reaction, or maybe even lack thereof, from the Bruins?
Well, I thought even before it all sort of blew up with Wilson and Pastrnak, I thought that Wilson was running around. I mean, he knew that 33 was not in the lineup for Boston, and I think that you go back to the second game between the Bruins and the Caps, there's Wilson and Chara fighting, and I thought that sort of quieted Wilson down. And it felt like this game that he was really running around. The hit on Krug, I don't think there's any. I mean, Bob, you can speak to this. Yeah, it's fine. It's just a massive human against a 5'9" guy,
that's
and that's good hit. Yeah, and you know, it's a spearing that's different, obviously. But I thought that he noticed that Jay Char was not there. He was running around. He was making his presence known. So that's when I really thought that you were going to see a response from. And I don't want to throw him on the bus here, but Brett Ritchie. Right, he plays 5 minutes through the first two periods. They throw him out there shortly thereafter the hit on Krug, and there's really nothing. Nothing really happens. And I'm not saying that he has to fight Tom Wilson to prove a point or stay in the lineup, but it might help. It might help to do something. You don't play in the PK. You don't play in the power play. You have very limited ice time. Don't you sort of? Isn't that what he's here to do in a way? Is to be a physical presence. So I was surprised that didn't happen. And I went back and I saw that Ritchie has fought Tom Wilson in his NHL career. It came back when he was in Dallas. So I was a little surprised by that. I was, and I thought that could have been a moment that would have been good for this team. It would have quieted some of the grumblings that you hear. You know, the next day in the Globe, you see the column that they didn't have each other's back. You know, that's not a tagline. That's not something that you want to follow you as a team. So I was surprised they didn't make response. But the game itself, jumping the way they did, I thought that was a great sign for this series. I thought this season series, the Bruins lost 2 out of 3 games, but I thought that they played well and they kept with them for the most part.
One game's a shootout, the other game's a one-goal game.
Exactly.
So, you know, those are good, strong games. You see some of that, you see more of that type of game when it's a blowout, right? And that's a little bit of a throwback, right? You know, all of a sudden it's not only do you not see 33 if you're Tom Wilson, you don't see 33 over there, but you're getting blown out. We need a response. And, you know, you say what you want about that guy, I'd take him on my team. I'd want him in on my team any day. I mean, I know he's tried to kind of figure it out as far as the not crossing the line. You know, we can't – the Bruins fans can't talk much about that because we've had guys cross the line, right? We've had guys get to the line and cross the line, and we like that toughness. But that game right there was, you know, a number of years ago, I remember the Bruins just doing whatever they wanted against Washington, toughness-wise, physical-wise. And that had a little bit of a different look to it. And we went down the list of all the guys not in the Bruins lineup that day, right? From Chara to Kevin Miller to David Backes to Chris Wagner. I mean, these are guys that, you know, are very accountable in their lineup. And when they didn't have those guys in there, so... And it was a blowout, and you're susceptible sometimes to that in a blowout type of game. Do you need it every night? No. No, but it was a little eye-opening, I thought. And I like a lot of what this team does. That was a little disturbing to see that, and you wonder what happens, okay, if you face this team in a 7-game series.
You don't have to fight Tom Wilson to be
no.
able to get that done.
Yeah.
So do it within the context of the game.
He's going
to
run Torrey Krug? Oh, somebody run
Backstrom,
yeah,
Carlson,
drill him.
Yeah, that's the response.
That is the response, and that's why when people say, you know, the Bruins lack toughness, it's like, well, no. By the 2019 definition, they should have it. Like that, they should be able to hit guys like Chris Wagner, like we talked about.
He wasn't in the lineup.
Exactly.
Remember.
Exactly. Now, how do they dress the best lineup to make sure they get that on a consistent basis? You know, to avoid that, do they need, in your opinion? Because I do wonder here, do they need to find the new Kevin Miller, but like, Ty, on their third pairing?
Ty,
like,
that's also a mindset, though. Mm-hmm. That's a mindset. It has to be an understanding up and down your roster. I don't think anybody's asking David Pastrnak to go run around and drill Jacob Vrana. But I think of those skaters that are on your bench, I think everybody has to have an understanding of the game that they're watching in front of them and what the proper response they need to have.
Well, speaking of Pastrnak, I mean, that was kind of one of the takeaways to me, was he ends up getting tangled up with Wilson. And look, I don't think any of us want to see that, because that's not what you want out of Pastrnak. But at the same time, I like the fact that he stood up for himself. You know, if Wilson's going to be spearing him in the nether regions and all that, like, if nobody else is going to do it, then, you know what, I'm going to make sure that Wilson knows that I'm not appreciating this. So I at least give him credit for that. But at the same time, yeah, I want somebody else stepping in that role and saying, Pasta, too valuable to risk yourself in a scrap with Tom Wilson.
He did it against Shea Weber earlier in the year. Remember that?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, no, what are you doing? Yeah, I mean, teams are going to play him physical. He's trying to stand up for himself. I get all that. Last night, how about that? Skinner went to throw a hit on Pastrnak. He drops a shoulder into him. Skinner goes down. I don't know what his status is, but he didn't come back from that game. No, I guess my point is, people that criticize Tom Wilson for the way he plays, we had guys like that, and everybody loved them. You know, Milan Lucic played on the line. You know, he speared guys. He came up in between their legs. You know, he suckered guys.
We
loved him.
I think, truth be told, I think there's, I think pretty much any team in the league would like to have a guy like Tom Wilson.
He scored 30 goals, and he played on the edge.
That's the truth, right? Is that I think everyone in Boston wants a Tom Wilson. They want that. He's the new Milan Lucic, right? That top liner who plays nastiness but can be a game, like, can change a game and flip it on its head just with one shift, because he's that physical.
It's not just here. It's the other 30 cities around the National Hockey League that are looking for a player like that. They've been looking for these guys for long periods of time. Go back to Cam Neely. How many teams at that juncture they want players like that, who are tough, physical, nasty, but can play the game. Obviously can't play it at a Hall of Fame level. Tom Wilson's not going to achieve that. But every general manager, every personnel guy is looking for that type of player that they can put in their lineup.
I'll just give you a chance to weigh in. Before you got here, when a caller brought up Danton Heinen, his role on the team, he was, you know, this guy was looking to use him as trade bait. But what do you think about what Danton Heinen brings to this team, and in particular the role that they've thrust him into recently here on the second line?
You know, Heinen's one of these guys, he gets so much grief from the fan base, and I don't really know if it's all that warranted. I mean, he's a 23-year-old who can play in your middle six. If he puts up 15, 20 goals, you should be happy with that. I think that you don't notice him for the wrong reasons defensively. He has the coaching staff's trust. I don't hate him in this role. Now, I would say that you have a logjam of left-shot wingers, which doesn't really help his case here in terms of a long-term fit. But of the group between DeBrusque, Bjork, and Heinen, I haven't had a problem with Heinen's game this year. I think that Bjork is coming along, obviously, as a full-time NHLer. We're seeing that. But I think that you need guys like Heinen. I mean, I sort of compare him, not directly, but, you know, Rich Peverly, when they had him, he would move up and down the lineup. He was best, I think, as a third liner for them. But he could move up and down if you need that. I think that this team doesn't have a ton of those players that it's a natural move, you know, in terms of you can't move Brett Ritchie up to the Bergeron line if you need to. You know, you don't want to move Chris Wagner to the Krejci line if you need to. Those guys are better in their roles. So I think that he plays an actual role in this team. And I think people are sort of quick to dismiss him because it's not flashy and it's not the way that they want to see it happen. But overall, I don't have this, oh my God, you got to get him out of here kind of vibe that I sense from a lot of Bruins fans.
No, and neither do I, but at the same time, if you're looking for value, if you're going to make a trade, I mean, and if it's in the offseason or if it's in the, if he helps you as a team right now because he's versatile and he's not going to hurt you, if that makes any sense, if that's a compliment, I guess. It's just, but he leaves me wanting a little bit more offensively. So I think that I've thought that all along, that there's more in him offensively, but it doesn't necessarily always show up on the score sheet.
Well, was that rookie year a tease in some way? So he had, what, 16 goals that year and, 47 points? So you're thinking to yourself, well, next year it's going to be 20 and maybe 55. And then the year after, ooh, we could be looking at 25 and 60. So who knows? I'm trying to think back to his production that first full rookie season and what keyed it. But I don't think there's any question that the ability is there. He's not afraid to go to the hard areas. He's got a good shot. He's got some great hockey sense. He's playing with some good players. There's got to be some more production that the Bruins can tease out of him.
And I think that you don't want to do it because we just talked about how good this line is. The way to get production out of him, if you need to, if you absolutely want to get points, you put him with 37 and 63, and then you move Pastrnak down. They can do it. That's how he got points last year. He had 19 and 20 with them or whatever it was last year when Pastrnak was out. It's an option they have. They don't love it long-term, it seems, that every time you bring it up, Cassie's quick to say, no, that's not a long-term fix in my opinion. So, but that's an option if you want to try to get his offensive game going and maybe kickstart that second line if they go into a long spell. That might be a way you do it.
Ty Anderson, you can read him on 98.5thesportshub.com. You can read him on Patriots and Bruins coming up tomorrow night. Appreciate you stopping in.
Anytime, guys.
We will continue. We got another hour still to go on the hockey show and your calls coming up right off the top after the Sports Hub headlines. It's Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers here on the hockey show until 11 o'clock. Hour number two here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. Bruins with a rare Saturday night off tonight. They're back at it tomorrow night in the back end of the home and home against Buffalo. Got a New Year's Eve matinee coming up on Tuesday, too.
Yeah,
1 o'clock game in New Jersey. You guys
love Newark.
Nothing like New Year's Eve in Newark, New Jersey. Stick around and watch the ball drop after the game. It'd be great.
Nope.
Let's go to Maria in Watertown to kick off this hour. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning. How are you guys today?
Good.
Listen, Ryan, I know I mentioned this to you earlier in the week, but with the broader hockey audience, maybe I'm going to repeat myself. With respect to the Capitals game on Wednesday night, watching that game, I kept saying to myself, I wish we had a Tom Wilson-like guy on this team. I honestly don't like the Bruins' chances against a team like Washington in the playoffs because we simply get pushed around way, way too much. And that's how St. Louis beat us in the Stanley Cup Finals. And I think that's how a Washington-St. Louis-type team will beat us again. I really had hoped that Brett Ritchie would kind of play that role on this team, but so far to me he's been a bit of a disappointment. And the fact that at the end of that Washington game it took Matt Grizzlick and Danton Heinen together to deal with Tom Wilson to me is a little bit troubling. And the other thing that I want to touch upon that game, and maybe this is a conversation for Billy Jaffe, is the officiating, Wes McCauley and Chris Rooney, that lack of explanation regarding that non-goal, to me, is unacceptable, totally unacceptable. It is disrespectful to the players, the coaches, even you, the play-by-play guys. You can't even explain to us what happened because they're not telling you what happened. How that continues to be allowed is mind-boggling to me. And Chris Rooney, he is one of the most arrogant officials I have seen out on the NHL ice all season long. That's all I want to say about those guys, and thanks for the all time, right, as always, gentlemen.
Appreciate the call, Maria.
Hold on. Yeah, first, with Chris Rooney, he apologized to the bench. He said he got it wrong. As far as the announcement in the building, I don't have any explanation why there wasn't an explanation, you know, why they didn't make an announcement in the building. That's something that clearly the National Hockey League has to get better at.
I mean, we've talked about this before.
Yeah, the play shouldn't have been blown dead, and it was.
And ultimately, there's nothing they can do about that. You can't overturn that call.
Just tell us, you know, there's no goal because there was a whistle. You know, you don't have to apologize over the air, over the mic, but you just give us a reason why. And, I mean, we assumed that's what the reason was, but then, okay. At least the crowd has an explanation.
Right. I mean, ultimately, the league comes out with a statement, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes later explaining the whole thing, but nobody in the building gets that.
They didn't go to the bench, by the way, Judd. I will say that. If they apologized to the bench, which they did, apparently, but that didn't happen right away.
No.
Because Chris Cassidy was standing over there with his arms up in the air going, what? And they just dropped the puck, and they went back down because it was a penalty. It was a delayed penalty on the Bruins, so they went back down into Boston's zone and dropped the puck. So there was no explanation at the time, and so it apparently came later.
But in the bigger picture, we've all watched it.
That's
going to
happen, right?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, the officials are going to screw up every
now and then. Tell us what's going on.
Well, and we see it a lot in the NFL. How many times will you see a flag get thrown, and then the referee will announce, you know what, there is no flag on the play, you know, first and 10 for the Patriots. There's no reason that the National Hockey League cannot do the same. You know, even with the whistle, there needs to be an explanation at that point. The whistle was blown, so the play was dead. We have a face-off in the Bruins zone. Done.
While we're back on that Washington games, Maria was talking a little bit about some of the nastiness later on in the game. I know we talked about Wilson and his issues. We hadn't talked about the TJ Oshie hit. Just interested to get your thoughts on that hit on McAvoy. In the it's a clean hit from letter of the law, but in the situation, was it necessary? I think is the bigger question there.
Yeah, I had a bit of a different take, and I could be completely off on this. I think Oshie took exception. McAvoy, he was hustling. Their net was empty. It was a blowout game. He was hustling through the neutral zone. So I'm not blaming this on McAvoy. I'm saying,
but it's a kind of, well, if you're playing hard, I'm playing hard kind of thing.
Maybe. And it was a clean hit, but in the situation of the game, yeah, over the top on Oshie's part, I thought, you know. But at the same time, his team's getting blown out. I think if the roles were reversed, that Boston fans would be happy that Oshie did that. If Oshie was on the Bruins, I'm saying, if the roles were reversed, they'd be happy about that hit. If someone's doing something. Right? So, you know, you can not like the hit if you're a Bruins fan, but I got to believe that if it's the situation was reversed, you'd like that.
I mean, as a player, like, how are you supposed to approach that situation? 90 seconds to go in a blowout game, like, at what point are you supposed to cut off the effort?
And it's a hard physical game, and you know, and there was stuff that happens earlier in games. You know, maybe there was a hit by McAvoy earlier in the game. Maybe there was something with him and Oshie earlier in the game, which I wouldn't doubt because McAvoy's a physical guy, and so is Oshie. And if I get my chance, I'm going to get him. There's a lot of stuff that happens earlier in games. Maybe it happened last game. But when I get my number, and I see that number, and I see the hit available, I don't care. I'm taking that shot. That happens all the time. All the time. So, yeah, that's and I don't know what I don't know that if there's any backstory there, but maybe there's not. But that type of thing, that type of hit, that happens all the time. And situation or not, my team's getting blown out. You see a guy hustling through the neutral zone with an empty net, and I got an opportunity to get back at a guy that's been physical with me. Yeah, take the hit. So I actually didn't have a problem with it. I thought that. I guess I wanted a little bit more response
from the Bruins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other point that she brought up is she said she didn't think that the Bruins could contend with a team like Washington if you meet them because they have a guy like Tom Wilson. Well, Tom Wilson was in the lineup last year against Carolina, and Carolina beat Washington in 7 in the first round. And other than Michael Ferland, who was in and out of the lineup for Rod Brind'Amour, I don't see
that's
Carolina in any way. As a more physical team than the Bruins. So the Capitals can still be had with Wilson in the lineup. Would you like to have a little bit more of a presence in your lineup? Sure. But again, the Capitals are beatable even with Wilson running around.
617-779-0985. We'll go to Jamie and Newton. You're next on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, guys. Just had a question about the World Junior Hockey Tournament. John Beecher Bruins draft pick, also Hall, and then the Czechoslovakian kid that blew his knee out. I'm going to hang up, just asking what they where they're at with the Bruins.
I appreciate the call. I mean,
a Beecher and Hall are in college, right? So they're in there, right? Beecher's a freshman. Is Hall a freshman? I'm not sure. He scored last game. He scored yesterday. And Lauko injured his knee, so he's done. He's out. He's been playing in Providence this year, but he injured his knee in the first game for the Czechs, and so he's unfortunately his tournament's over. So that's he's a guy that impressed us in the preseason. You know his tenaciousness, I guess. Or
he's
tenacity.
Got some jam.
Yeah, he does. I haven't seen him play in Providence this year, so I really can't give a good scouting report on how he's doing as a pro. But you know he made an impression when he was here in Boston during the preseason. That's for sure. Beecher, they're high on. I mean, a big guy that can skate, you know, centerman, left shot, and I haven't watched a lot of the World Juniors, I confess, so far, so I can't give a real good scouting report there, but I know that they're high on him.
Yeah,
I mean, I hope so. Their first round pick from last year.
High on him now.
That's alarming.
it is the great thing about this tournament in particular is you hear these names for a lot of fans. You hear these names. You never actually get a chance to see these guys.
I know Beecher's playing some quality minutes for Team USA. The little that I've watched, he's out there regularly. He's out there, but he's not. I don't think he's dented the score sheet yet in the first couple of games. And they scored 6 yesterday and 4 against Canada. So nothing offensively yet for him. But I think his freshman year stats wise is going okay. And same with Hall.
All right, we will continue, and we can take more of your calls coming up, 617-779-0985, here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. To join us here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show, Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you. John, you're going to be up next here this morning. What's going on?
Good morning, guys. Not much. I'm just calling to give a little shout-out to Pa Lindholm. This guy, I know he plays very limited minutes, and I just wanted you guys to talk about it because I think he deserves it a little bit. This guy has something you can't teach. It was just hockey sense. And I know he plays very limited minutes, but the minutes he plays, I watch him. The sense this guy has is, like, amazing. And I know it won't happen, but I'd love to see the Bruins try to use him in a skillful role, like up top. It probably won't happen. But I don't know if you guys know this, but this guy has skills, too, also. He's put up a point a game in the Swedish league. He is, like, one of the top players there back when he played. So I want you guys to talk about him because I feel like he never gets it.
All right. Appreciate the call, John. And look, this is, like the depth and role players, I think Bruins fans understand that over the years, are a big part of what this team is about. And the fact that you can roll 4 lines and you can count on these guys to play in different situations. And, I think the Lindholm signing certainly didn't get a whole lot of people's attention when it happened, but you see this guy and say, okay, he fits in a bottom six role. He can play some of those minutes for you, and he can and provide some valuable two-way play. I think that's what I see in him.
Wasn't he the last guy to get scored against this year in the National Hockey League? Wasn't that the stat when he was on the ice?
Yeah, guys who had played a certain amount of minutes, whatever it was, he was the last guy to get scored against. He hadn't been on the ice for any goals against through I don't know how many games it was. I mean, that's not the case anymore, but it was at one time.
Yeah.
He's been reliable. He's been a smart player. I think at times early in the season, Bruce Cassidy was intrigued by what he could possibly do if you move him up in the lineup.
Well, he's filled a role for them here as the fourth line center because Corrali's been up on the left wing with Coyle. Right, so if you're forced to move things around like that, then you've got to have somebody to plug in, and Lindholm has done that.
Well, let's talk about that. Just kind of transitioning to, as you said, Corrali's been playing on that left side.
Couple games now.
And Bjork's got moved over to the right side. We've talked about Bjork and what his ideal role on this team is, and at one point it seemed like they wanted him to play exclusively on the left side. We see him back on the right side. How do you feel like that transition's gone for him? And, do you think that that's are they looking at him in a different way now than they were earlier on in the season?
I still think that they'd like to see more offense out of him, that's for sure. I mean, we talked about Heinen already. Bjork's in the same situation, right? 6 goals, 11 points, 31 games. You know, it's similar numbers to what Heinen's got over 39 games. He's got 15 points, Heinen does. So I think that there's more to their game. And now, does that need time to grow? That's possible, especially with Bjork. He hasn't played a lot of hockey. He's had his last 2 seasons ended prematurely because of injury. This year, knock on wood, he stayed healthy. He's been involved. He had a good – he got sent down to Providence. He did the job down there. He came up here, and he's been fine. Some nights he's been good. I think mostly he's been fine. Okay, he's not – and I want to see good more often. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Sure.
He's got the skating ability, young legs, get going. Right side, left side, probably better suited on the left side, but certainly I haven't minded him on the right. I mean, I think, you know, he ends up over on the right a lot anyhow, it seems like.
Yes.
which is fine. I mean, that happens a lot, you know, with guys. I mean, with all the movement now, you're not tethered to one spot. So you can move around, but, within the shift. So, but with him, I've had no problem with him. You know, I just want to see good more often.
And maybe the good transition is something that Charlie Coyle mentioned to us during one of the intermissions, that Bjork's a guy with his feet that can influence the game. You want to see him do that a little bit more often. And if he's able to do that, that's going to open up some opportunities for him offensively. He's got a good shot, but he's got to be able to use his feet to influence the game to help him to help himself generate those opportunities. But he's been steady and poised with the puck in his own zone. I think he's played a smart brand of hockey. I think during the course of the year, he's gotten a lot more confident in his shoulder, that he can go to the hard areas and make the plays that he needs to make to get pucks out and play the way he needs to play defensively to transition the offense.
Let's go to Frank the Tank up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Morning, Frank.
Morning, guys. Hope your holidays was all well.
What's up, Frank?
You as well, Frank.
Not too much. Listen, Judd, first off, I really want to thank you for that conversation at Beatles event. That was about the greatest hour of stimulating hockey talk I've had in 20 years.
Look at you, man of the people.
It was excellent. It was an excellent, talk and shop about hockey. It was great. I really do appreciate it. Look, you all know how I feel about the game. I love the speed. I love the talent. I love the grace of the game. I am a hockey fan. But as you all know, I mean, I love the violence. You know, I've always said it. I give violence a chance. It can always work in a hockey game. Brian Burke said many years ago that when all the enforcers were starting to get, you know, weaned out of the league, that the rats were eventually going to take over. And in my opinion, they have. I see a lot of dirty stuff behind the play, a lot of stick play, and not a lot of accountability for anything. The one thing that I think Brian Burke missed was any remaining enforcers, like a Tom Wilson, like a Reeves, they are also getting away with a lot of stuff when there's no one there to respond, no accountability. So I'm hoping that the St. Louis Blues of last year, the Washington Capitals, I hope the teams around the league see this and maybe that there's a resurgence in the more physical players who can play, are not just goons. I would like to see the role of the enforcer play because I want to see more accountability in the game.
I appreciate the call, Frank.
All for it, as long as they can play, right? I mean, I don't think there's a spot for a guy that can't play as well as he needs to in order to keep up. I mean, so, yeah, all for it. All for it. I mean, you know, when the Bruins... I mean, we always go back to 2011. I know the game's changing a little bit, but I mean, they could play any way you wanted, right? Was it that season that Dallas came in here and tried to run them out of the building?
I believe
it was. In the first period, and the Bruins put a beat down on the Dallas Stars. I mean, it was unbelievable, right? And that was all in the first period. You know, we had Campbell settling a score with Ott. Ott might have won that one. And then after that, there were 3 fights in a row, and the Bruins just destroyed guys, and game was over. Mm. I mean, Dallas was over at that point. I mean, but they could play the speed game. They could play a finesse game. They could do whatever. You know, and they so they played that game, and Lucic and Chara never even dropped the gloves. it was McQuaid, it was Thornton, it was Ferentz. You know, it was just so. Yes, the game has changed. We don't see that anymore. You realize that, but can you play a hard physical game? We were talking just off the air. You know, if you're going to face a team like Washington in the playoffs, that's conference finals, right? All the teams in the Atlantic, Tampa, Toronto, Montreal, Florida, who am I forgetting? I'm talking about the contending teams. They're not physical
right.
teams, overly physical teams. You're not facing Washington until a conference finals. St. Louis proved that they could play a hard physical brand of hockey, and they didn't have an enforcer.
Well, that's what I was going to. That's what I was going to ask you guys.
Hard, big, physical hockey.
The recent history of Stanley Cup champion. I mean, Washington, St. Louis, like. These are teams that can play physical. They have a lot of skill too. They have got some guys who definitely can put the puck in the net, but they play a heavy game. And you know, so we've seen this kind of move toward speed, skill, and all that, and some of the physicality is coming out of the game. But the teams that have had the most success in the last couple of years are teams that can do both. Right. So it's not just go, go, go. You also need guys who can hit and play that style.
Well, and you need guys that are able to go to the hard areas at both ends of the ice. I loved, by the way, talking with Frank the Tank at Beatles event. It was terrific. But in many ways, the other thing I'm thinking about is the National Hockey League is a copycat league.
Yep.
Teams see success in one city, and they think to themselves, you know what? We need to be able to emulate that. So you see traits of that around the National Hockey League.
I should add in, or Buffalo was the other team I forgot. But I should add in, like, If the playoffs started today, the Bruins would start against who? Philly? Yeah.
Yeah.
They'd play the Flyers if the playoffs started, because you're going to have that extra Metro team in there. But the teams in the Atlantic aren't overly physical, right? I don't think Philly is either anymore. And they've gotten away from that, which is...
And the fan base is not happy about that either.
I would guess that the majority of the Philly fan base would probably be in the Frank the Tank category. It's like
most people are.
Yeah, no, it's
and they voted with their wallets in Philadelphia. Yeah. By the way,
yeah. Let's sneak in Jay in the car before we get to headlines. Hey, Jay.
Hey, thanks for taking the call, guys. Yeah, real quick, I got to agree with Frank the Tank. I mean, give me a little bit more violence in the game. Bring it back a little bit. The physicality of it. I mean, everybody loved the Big Bad Bruins, and it seemed like the Big Bad Bruins are like one of the last teams to really get on to the speed up, you know, get the quicker players with more talent. But the reason why I called was I wanted to ask about Noah Jari. It seemed like he didn't leave for a lot of money. I don't know what the deal was with that, why we didn't try to retain him, or if it was just a matter of we got to keep Carlo, we got to keep McAvoy, and these guys got to get paid too. So I'll just take it off the air and have a listen. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it, Jay.
Yeah, what did Noel get? I think he got almost $2 million a year, didn't he?
Yeah, something in that neighborhood. It
was... Noel got 3 years, an average of 1.67 per.
Okay.
So I mean, it was, you know, they're right up against it. Like, yeah, every dollar counts. Yeah,
somebody's going to be a casualty, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, they bring in guys for $1 million or less, and you have to let some guys who are set to get their payday go. It happened 2 years ago with Tim Schaller and Riley Nash, and Noel Jari did everything that you could want. You know, he sometimes had the injuries because of how hard he played night in and night out. He had a lot of chances to score here with the Bruins too. He didn't put the puck in there. This year he's putting the puck in there. I don't know what's changed for him, but good for him. I just sometimes you just price yourself out and you got to move on. And it seemed that way with Noel Jari. I think that's just reality of it. You'd love to keep him, but he's going to get paid by somebody, and you don't have the money for him if you got to pay other guys.
The Bruins came out publicly and said, we wanted him back.
Yeah,
but sure.
We can't bring him back at that number.
You can't pay everybody. You know, that's ultimately what it comes down to, especially the guys further down your lineup. You know, you can't – we've seen that in the past. You get into cap trouble if you start giving those guys – you know, a little bit too much.
Achari's a guy you want to go to battle with, too. I mean, just sure. In terms of, you know, if you know he's going to bring it physically every night. And, you know, unfortunately, yeah, just, hey, he earned it for him.
All right, Tim McCone's got Sports Hub headlines. Our final half hour coming up. Billy Jaffe joins us next. 98.5 The Sports Hub. And the final half hour of the Sports Hub Hockey Show for this week and for 2019. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. And now joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline from Nesson, Billy Jaffe. Good morning, Billy.
Good morning, gentlemen. Happy post-Christmas and Hanukkah and whatever else everybody out there celebrating. Hope you guys had a great few days. Everybody well. Guys sounded good last night, and team looked good last night. Well, second period looked real good.
You weren't working last night?
No, I was. I catch a little bit here and there. You know, I turn you guys on. I got the app on my phone. You know, I like listening.
He's always got his ear to the ground. You know, he's got to
always. I was working, Beersy. Always working.
Okay. You
know.
Okay.
Hey, good night for the road teams last night. 7-4 in the 11 games. The year before, this is filed under the useless stat category. 8-4-1. Last year for the home team, so it flip flopped. So good night again. Road teams came in and seemed to play well last night.
Well, we want to put your scouting hat on for a second here, Billy, this morning, because we had a caller earlier who brought up the World Juniors and in particular wanted a scouting report on Beecher. What can you tell us about him?
Well, I heard Beersy talking about that this morning too a little bit. I've only watched a little myself, but I can tell you, talking to people that are coaching him, that he's been real good so far. He's one of those kids that when he gets that big body of his going, his skate, I mean, that's what his skating is. Skating is his game. If he can get on the forecheck, he's been really, really good. He needs to get that mindset to be that powerful, dominant power forward all the time. I'm told his attitude's been real good. Just, you know, it's the old learning how to practice with a purpose at all times, but they've really liked him. I mean, he's still growing. I mean, you know, what, I don't know what exactly. I think he's 6'3", 208 right now, guys, and he's still growing a bit. So the fact is, I think he's a longer-term project. But from what I've seen, the couple of, you know, opportunities I've had between the two games where they've played, looks solid, looks comfortable. And if he gets that mindset, game in, game out, to be the power forward out there. And that's something I'm, you know, you guys were just talking, Beersy, Judd, you guys were just talking about, you know, Washington, and I couldn't agree with everything more with everything you guys said, you know, players and everything. We're not seeing the big guys, many of them, the size of Tom Wilson, play like Tom Wilson anymore, because that's not what they're preaching. You know, that it's not what skill, everybody's preaching skill so much over power and power forward and being an aggressive mindset. It's just, it's a different thing nowadays.
Yeah, but does that change because it is a copycat league and St. Louis wins last year, Washington the year before?
I don't know, Beersy, because with youth hockey, and you were involved with it, I know, you know, for years, and you still are. You see kids a lot too. There's such a mindset of we got to teach them how to stick handle, you know, through millimeters. You know what I mean? And do the toe drags and do this and do that. I don't know if there's the mentality to go out there and be a real strong. Not when I say bully. I guess I mean bully. You know, like a Tom Wilson. I don't know if there's enough of that mindset at the youth. There's a lot of, you know, we see a lot of kids at times, especially once checking begins in Beersy, again, you know this, that don't learn how to check the right way, but that's different than being a powered, you know, a dynamic power player.
All right, let's talk about some things going on around the league this week. News has been in the headlines this morning that Ovechkin's going to skip the All-Star game.
Yeah, here, you know, we go again.
Again. Yeah. I mean, this is not the first time it's happened. It probably won't be the last time, although, you know, do you expect to hear any rumblings about maybe upping the penalty for, you know, for being a healthy scratch at the All-Star game, particularly if you're going to be a captain?
I haven't heard that. You know, if anything, people were hoping that they eliminated the penalty. They won't. That's been negotiated. So for now, that won't be. This is my annual let's get rid of the All-Star game conversation. That's really more what I would go to. Figure out something else to do. I don't have a good answer anymore. The league doesn't want to give up the boondoggle of 3 days for vendors, for sponsors, to put on a celebration of the game. Most players, I shouldn't say most, there's always a handful. Would you guys agree? that just don't want to go. Maybe some of them will go and knowingly that they don't want to, but they'll do it to suck it up. But there's a lot that don't because it ends up being a, you know, an opportunity that they could use, like Ovechkin says, to rest his body. He's fine. I mean, he's fine doing this, and I know that he has the team's blessing.
Well, I'm sure there will be other players around the league that all of a sudden get the doctor's note. Oh, you know what? I'm
back.
There's
up,
a nagging, you know? Injury. Yeah. Oh my, Dr. Beeper is going to send the note in. Oh my arm. And there are going to be some guys that skip the All-Star game. I don't know, you know, to your point, what the solution would be, because the National Hockey League, you know, they want to be able to stage this as a spectacle for the game, and at the same time, there is a lot of sponsorship venues involved, but. I don't have a good answer on what they should do in lieu of an All-Star.
Yeah, well, that's the problem, and neither do they. I mean, and they don't. The thing is, I think they would actually be, if they could figure it out, I think they'd be really commended by the players and by many and by fans for not having it and figuring something else out or trying something else. They're always afraid of this. It's kind of like the second winter class, not second winter class. What do they call them? The stadium series games. Mm-hmm. They're now putting them in different areas just to satiate that local market, and they don't really worry about the overall national vibe of it. You know, the All-Star game. I don't know what the ratings are. I can't imagine it's great. It's fine, I'm sure, but it's really more about giving it to a city. Whether it's a St. Louis, okay, or anywhere, you know, and that city gets to celebrate hockey for a couple of days. So it's a thank you to the ownership. It's a thank you to the fans. It's a way to get some hardcore people perhaps to travel there too. That's the big thing. And again, it's huge. It really is big for their sponsors. They get to do an awful lot. They get to thank their sponsors there. You know, they get to entertain them a lot there.
Well, speaking of the showcase events, you got the Winter Classic coming up this week, which I know you're working for NHL Radio. But it's, you know, it's in Dallas at the Cotton Bowl. Dallas and Nashville is not the most attractive national TV matchup.
Nope.
You know, and so this is, you know, in a lot of ways, this has replaced the All-Star game as the league showcase event over the years, as the Winter Classic. This is the, you know, their big nationally televised event, and they put in two teams that a lot of the country isn't really going to care about in a place that's not a real huge traditional hockey market. It's an interesting selection.
Couple of things. It is interesting, especially that the Cotton Bowl, I'm told, I've never been. I don't know if Judd or Bob, or RJ, if you've been there. I'm told it's just an old building that you know, hasn't used an awful lot. But anyways, it's a thank you to Tom Galassano, the owner. I got his name wrong. The owner of Dallas.
Gagliardi.
Gagliardi, thank you. I got my old Buffalo owner and Tommy mixed up. He's getting a big thank you. He's owned the team now for some years. They've sold it out, I'm told. I'm told that it's almost 90,000 tickets. Wow. That are out for that. Now, whether or not they have 90 grand there, I don't know. But the fact is they sold it. I talked to somebody in Dallas recently. He wanted to take his son, I was told, and he couldn't get tickets, that it was sold out. So that's a good sign. RG, I don't disagree with your statements before, though. It's not a sizzle, national sizzle matchup. But what I've been told is the fact of the matter is, A, it's a thank you. B, it's, you know, hockey in Dallas, been there for a while. They've had some good teams there. And C, look at their opponent. Their opponent being the Nashville Predators. I'm told that within either next year or the year after, Nashville will have the Winter Classic because of them going down there for this. And so I think a lot of people would jump on board quickly to go down to Nashville for 3 days.
I'd have to figure out a way to get a job there.
Yes, and that's the response that a lot of people are going to have. But again, I was told by good source that this, you know, he says, you know why the league is doing this. And I said, I'm guessing. And he said, no, it's because Nashville will get a game, if not next year, the year after. And that's going to be, I've never seen a football game in that building, but, you know, you can see it from downtown Nash. And that's going to be a 3-day, and I say this complimentary, fiasco in Nashville. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be amazing. So those are the big reasons that the game is happening. And good for Dallas, too, selling 90,000 tickets.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so the defending champs are on a bit of a roll this week, Billy.
The St. Louis Blues win again last night, and that's seven in a row now for this team. And if memory serves correct, second seven-game winning streak this season for St. Louis. And while I absolutely had a ton of respect for what St. Louis did last year, selfishly didn't love the result for obvious reasons, but I didn't expect to see them. I mean, I thought they'd be a good team. I'm thoroughly impressed, Judd and Bob and RG. I'm thoroughly impressed with where they're at. I mean, they're sitting at 56 points. They're pretty much running away in the Western Conference. They're 10 points up on either Arizona or Vegas, whoever
without
you want to.
Without Tarasenko.
Yeah. Exactly, without Tarasenko. And, I mean, you know, David Perron is scoring a ton. Schwartz has picked it up. They're getting good goaltending from Allen when he gets an opportunity to play, too. So I'm impressed. I think, you know, look, Craig Berube is he's worth it to them, man. A great hire, a replacement hire by Doug Armstrong. And then, you know, it took him a little while to get his contract extension done. And he's worth it. He absolutely is. So, I mean, this St. Louis Blue team looks to me to be for real. And they've only have eight regulation losses? Yeah, on the season. Pretty darn good.
Well, a team in the West heading in the other direction is the Edmonton Oilers. They're dropping like a stone. They're down into the second wild card right now and clinging to that by only 1 point. What's happening?
Their power plays good.
Yeah, sure it is. What's happening out in Edmonton?
They've stunk lately, and they've this is a team that has lost. Now they got their asses kicked last night, 5-1 at home, Calgary. They've lost 11 of the last 14 games at home. They got scored on an under a minute into the game last night, and it was like a minute and a half into the second and early on into the third. Dave Tippett was ticked off at his team. I was reading some stuff about how he felt that the morning skate didn't look good either. He hoping that they were prepared for this game. They were anything but prepared for the game. I saw this number, this statistic. Draisaitl in the last 16 games is a minus 25. That's unbelievable. And they're a two-man team. I think we talked about it, Judd and Bob. We've talked about it coming in. You know, when they got up to a hot start, how long could it last? You know, they had James Neal scoring a ton on the power play. That's dried up a bit. But this is a team that right now does not look to be situated in the right spot at all.
Well, they're so top-heavy. If you go after McDavid and Draisaitl, Zach Kassian is third. You go from 61 points to 26 points, and everything starts to move down. The goaltending has started to spring some leaks. And I think there are some guys, especially on the back end, like Oscar Klefbom, that are playing too many minutes. And because of that, you're getting poor results.
Yeah. Their
goaltending hasn't been good lately.
Oh, and their goaltending. I don't know if you guys saw. Did you guys see the highlights from last night? No, I mean Koskinen started, and then Mike Smith came in. It hasn't been good. Dave Tippett's going to lay into them today. Connor McDavid's got to pick it up as well. But it is just a two man team right now. And meanwhile, the Flames, the team that beat them, they're starting to under Jeff Ward. And I think we're all thrilled for Jeff. They were really good to begin. They chilled off a bit, but now they win that game. They find themselves in the third spot in the Western and the Pacific Division. So good for them.
They're 1 point out of first.
Yeah. Well, that division
who wins that division? I mean, I think we talked about Arizona last week. I'm still not like wowed by them. I like the addition of Hall, but I mean, is it Vegas? They can't seem to get their stuff together. They lose last night to Anaheim. I just look at that division, and that to me, you guys agree, weakest division. I know the Atlantic isn't the deepest either, but to me, the Pacific seems almost weaker.
Well, it's either the weakest division or the most balanced. They're just beating up on each other every night. I don't know. I mean, it's 46, 46, 45, 44. I mean, it's all tightly packed. The team that's in first place, the team that's in first place today could be out of the playoffs tomorrow.
Well, Arizona, so it begs another question, right, or brings up another topic. Arizona made their major move, right, with Taylor Hall joining their team. You know, does Vegas need to add that defenseman? That's been their kind of Achilles heel since the start, that they're a little thin on the defensive side of it, and they're, you know, they spend a lot of money as well, so you know there's not a lot of room to work there. You got to bring somebody in, but you might have to give up somebody off your roster in order to do that, to make some room. You know, what do these other teams look to do? Do they feel obligated? And I know that question was brought up. Do these teams feel obligated to make a move to combat Arizona, or is it just bring everybody on kind of a level playing field once Arizona adds Taylor Hall?
I think there's that. I think there's more of that. I also think that the top teams, and not that they can get passive, or you know, they can think that they've, you know, they've got it made, but I mean, you know, Arizona, Vegas, Calgary, okay, they're up there. Edmonton, I don't, even if Edmonton finds a way to squeak into the playoffs, which I'm not convinced they will, I mean, I don't see them as any really major threat. But, you know, in the Pacific, you've got the three worst teams, Anaheim, L.A., and San Jose. They're the three worst teams in the whole conference. So I think those teams just wait a little bit. Vegas will try to make a move, Beers. They will, for a defenseman. I got to think Calgary, if they continue to play pretty well under Jeff Ward, that they'll try and do something. But Vegas will have to move somebody, a forward off their roster, to get a defenseman, as you said, because of the cap.
All right, Billy, we appreciate the time as always, and have fun down in Dallas this week.
Well, thank you very much. I'll see Judd and Bob tomorrow, but then off down to Dallas. It'll be a lot of fun. And if happy, healthy New Year to everybody out there, too, after we talk next time after the New Year.
You too. We'll talk to you next weekend.
See you guys.
All right, there's Billy Jaffe joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Saturday night off, guys. Enjoy it. Have a good time, and we will talk to you next Saturday. I'm not sure. Are you back in? You guys are home again next Saturday, I think. So
we're going to be doing the show from the Garden.
Afternoon game.
Oh, that's
Edmonton.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So we'll have an interesting. Hopefully, get all the tech stuff worked out. That's always fun on Saturday morning. So we'll talk to you next Saturday here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Don't forget tomorrow night, rare Sunday night game here on 98.5 the Sports Hub, with the Bruins and Buffalo in the back end of that home and home. That'll do it for this week's edition. We'll talk to you next Saturday. Enjoy the rest of your Saturday.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.